making that choice got me through, one of the toughest moments in my life. And that's why I became a lifetime runner in that mm-hmm. moment, because it showed me what I was possible, what was capable, and never knew, that I could run that far in the mountains, and I did it all alone.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation will go. So if you're ready, let's get started.
My guest today is Gina Silva. She is a running coach, lives in Tampa, Florida, and so her team is playing the Super Bowl, and I live in Kansas City, and my team is playing the Super Bowl. I don't know if Tampa is kind of crazy about football as Kansas City is, but depending on who you talk to, I mean, that's what everyone is focused on. We're going to focus on running and talking about this is called Trail Talk, and this is supposed to be like a virtual trail run. Now, I always try to invite guests that I think might have an interesting story, and so I don't necessarily know a lot about them when I bring a guest on. And this is the case with Gina. I've seen Gina in Instagram. She does an Instagram live that's very similar to what we're doing here, and she talks about running. And I thought she looks like she would be a fun person to talk to. So, welcome to the show, Gina. This is called Trail Talk. Tell just a little bit about who you are, kind of a thumbnail view, so people can
sure. Well, thanks so much for having me on, Eric. I am Gina Silva. I my run coaching business is called A Runner's Mindset. That's my handle on Facebook and on Instagram. I've been a runner for about only 8 years, so I started later in life. Just got into coaching actually a few years ago, and I just, when I started running, fell in love with it, I think, as probably everyone that's here. It took over my life in a way that, I think a lot of people feel like it's their passion, but it's actually become not just my profession as a run coach, that's my side business, but I've taken it a step further. I now work for Ironman in my professional career. And I work directly with our coaches, the certified coaches for Ironman, mm-hmm. and our athletes. So it's like a full circle. I went all in on endurance sports, and
I really did jump in. Yeah,
I love it. I think that's kind of what inspired me to start. I think similar to what you're doing here, where I'm just obsessed with understanding how people go, to these distances and go beyond and do things that seem, almost impossible. And I think that's mm-hmm. what we're always on that pursuit for. So yeah I love it.
Well, the question I usually start off with is to give kind of a starting point. How you said you started running later in life. I always mm-hmm. ask how people got started running. And so some people have, run into some people who have run all their life.
Yeah.
But you said you started, and I think most people, they stop in high school and then there's a break and then start again. So how did you get into running when you did?
Well, let me start by saying I wasn't athletic at all when I was a kid.
Well, and no sports. That's for a lot of us too. I mean, I was very, a lot of people, that's their story. They start out, no, I never played sports.
Nothing. I mean, I wasn't on any teams or anything. And I think, like a lot of people, I got into my, getting into the 30s, starting to get later into the 30s. I'm like, oh gosh, I got to figure out something I need to do, mm-hmm. to really get active and started trying to experiment with, different exercises, going to group fitness classes and things like that. And then somebody said, hey, why don't we try, this running program that was going on at a local store. And it was like 8 weeks and they're going to train you for a 5K. And I had tried couch to 5K before. And I, kind of you know, got it and then never really stuck with it. And I did that 8-week program. And it was really hard. And I ended up with an injury at the end. And then I quit. That's actually the beginning of my journey.
What injury did you get?
After the 8 weeks, due to poor instruction and the fact that I am very literal, I ended up with a stress fracture on the top of my foot because I interpreted what they told me to really start becoming like a toe runner where you're running so much on your forefoot. Okay. And so it was a stress fracture. And I basically, after that, I quit 100% because I couldn't, you know, you have to have a boot on your foot for so many weeks. I was like, this sucks. but that's where the story begins. About 5 months later, I woke up one morning and looking at Facebook, you know, I'm like, oh, what's on Facebook today? Oh, here's an ad for the Rocky Mountain National Park Half Marathon. And I just love Colorado. That's like my dream state. And Rocky Mountains is my favorite place to visit. And I was like, I have to sign up for this. I had only trained for a 5K, mind you, prior.
Right.
Here I am. I haven't run in months and I never even went past 3.1 miles. And I'm like, I want to sign up for this half marathon.
Yeah.
And before my husband could even wake up, I signed up for it. And the rest is history.
So you live in Florida, you signed up for a mountain marathon. So you're training at sea level and Rocky Mountain National Park should be, if I remember right, it's around 8,000 feet.
Yeah. If that tells you anything about my, how I am. So yeah, that's kind of a insight into my.
So was this a road marathon? I mean, I think when I think of running at Rocky Mountain National Park, I would be drawn to saying I was going to run the trails, but.
Yes,
I rode half marathon. Yeah,
and I think honestly, even at that time, as it was so long ago, there weren't all of the amazing documentaries that there are now on trail running. You know, so my only experience in running was road running, and I was like, you know, so it was a road race, and but it was a fateful moment actually that I made that decision because without really knowing it, a few months later, my husband and I split up. So it became like a life-changing moment for me because I invested not only in registering for that race, but I knew coming off of injury, I was like, okay, I really got to find somebody who can help coach me, who knows what they're doing, and who's been through the ringer of injuries and knows how to help somebody come back. And I found an amazing coach here in Tampa who's been running her whole life and has, you know, run over 100 marathons and whatnot. And, you know, she's become my mentor ever since. And, you know, long story short, that making that choice got me through, you know, one of the toughest moments in my life. And that's why I became a lifetime runner in that moment, because it showed me what I was possible, you know, what was capable, and never knew, you know, that I could run that far in the mountains. And I did it all alone. I went there alone, ran it alone. I trained with her alone. I was like, I'm not running with other people. You know, I'm going to do this and figure it out. So just with a coach's help and my own.
So how long was your training? How long did you give yourself to?
I gave myself, it was 8 months. So I gave myself a very long period of time because I had no idea. So
that's a very doable time frame to, I mean, even if you were starting from, you were starting from off of
an injury. And I was starting from scratch.
So you were really starting from scratch, yeah.
Yeah, it was like from, you know, basically couch to half marathon. So I was like, I thought that was decent. Although there were a lot of odds, like you said, going against me. I'm coming from sea level. You're going to a race at altitude. There was a cutoff. So there was a lot of different things, you know, that could have went wrong. And even when I got there, they were like, you know, there's no way you're going to be able to maintain the pace that you have maintained in Florida. But it varies. It really varies. I don't know. I think I'm actually made to live in the mountains. I have no honestly what it is about me. Altitude really has little to no effect on me. I've
talked to other people who are like that. And
yeah. I mean, and I'm happy to report, you know, so that was how my running journey started. And my husband and I were separated for a year and a half, and we're now back together, you know, happily married and whatnot. So, but it was a life-changing, it was a life-changing moment, just, you know, making that decision and finding that race. And so, there was so more you said running.
the running helped you through that emotionally.
Absolutely.
What were there any kind of changes inside of you that in actually making that, you know, finishing that goal? You know, what were some of the inner things that changed inside of you that made a difference for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was where this whole idea of a runner's mindset was born. Because I think, you know, for me, and I'm sure many others who've been through experiences where you feel like running has changed your life, you really don't realize your own capabilities until you push beyond, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, getting out there consistently and doing it, but going and doing these things alone and really getting through it and pushing through, it was a side of myself that I had never seen or even, you know, thought was possible. And so it was just, it was life changing. I felt like running to me, it is life, you know, it was life itself.
Yeah, it helps you to discover some things about yourself. What was the community like there in Rocket, you know, at the race?
Oh, it's fantastic. I was lucky enough to sign up for, I got into this little like VIP pre-race training program, which you're thinking, well, gee, what can they really teach you the day before a race? Mm-hmm. But it was actually all a lot of mindset work.
Okay.
Again, which feeds into, you know, why I am where I am now. And it was fantastic. I ended up meeting a few women that were there. And they kind of took me in. They ended up, you know, kind of driving me around, and I didn't know these people from Adam, and they were like treating me like I was their family. They were there for me at the finish line cheering, and they're like calling my name, and I'm like, who's calling my name? I'm here by
myself. Who do I know in Colorado, right?
And that's, you know, that's the amazing power of running community. I'm that person now. You know, I reach out to people. I've shepherded people that I don't know from Adam, you know, I've met through Instagram or through Facebook, and I'll go out and help support them on virtual races and things like that, because I think that that's the community of running. The power of the community is amazing.
Yeah. And then, so I can see, I mean, for those on the podcast can't see, but I'm looking at the wall behind you, and you ran a few more races than, yeah. than just that ultra, yes. race or that half marathon. So where did you go after that? What was your?
I went, I think in addition to the, you know, the life struggles and things that I got through, but choosing that race was a discovery of combining travel and, you know, and running. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love with it. So I've done, I've been to the Grand Tetons, Great Smoky Mountains. I've done the race in Sugarloaf Mountain, Maine. I've been to Washington, D.C. Cherry Blossom 10-miler, Virginia Wine Country, basically all over the U.S., Napa mm-hmm. Valley, Big Sur. you know, I love anything that's scenic, you know, anywhere that's just scenic with mountains or views. I'm all about it. And I was slated a few years ago to actually start to do my first European race, but it didn't pan out. So that's still on my bucket list.
What one?
To get over there.
What one are you doing?
Again, this race is a testament to the weirdo that I am. I like to push myself. It's called the Snowdonia Marathon. I encourage you to look it up. It is
Snowdonia. Okay.
Snowdonia. It is Britain's toughest road race.
Okay.
It's in Wales, and it is just one of the most epic races. I was very fortunate to actually get in. It's a very, very tough race to get into. But due to personal circumstances, I wasn't able to make it out there. So it's still on my list. And I made it really great. I found a pen pal, if you will, a social media pen pal over there, who I communicate with now, and I've I've been friends with him for a few years now. And every time I see his pictures, I'm like, I've got to get over there. It's so amazing. So, yeah.
I've asked several people about bucket list races. And it's interesting. So, because there are some people who have an internet. I mean, they have, there are international races.
There's so many. I feel like I love U.S. and there's so many things to do in the U.S. But I'm like, once you get outside, like Ireland and Wales and all those places, I mean, there's just so many incredible places to see. So as soon as we get done with this pandemic craziness, on to the traveling.
Yes. I've started expanding my thinking of like, maybe I could go to South Africa and run Comrades. Yeah, that's a road race, I'd have to train differently for that. I guess your distance that you like to run? You've run some marathons and all the way down to 5K. So
yeah.
What's kind of your sweet spot for distance?
For distance, I mean, I think I do like the kind of in between distances, you know, half marathon. I love 15K just because it's a weird number. It's an uncommon number. But, you know, again, I think like most runners, once you go to that longer distance, you know, marathon, you want to keep going. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I was on the last, my last marathon that I actually ran. I was supposed to run one this past season, but was injured, so I wasn't able to do it. But the prior season in 2019, I had trained harder than I ever did for any other marathon, was running, you know, 50 plus miles a week. And it was the first time I felt like in the marathon that I was like, I could go beyond, you know, mm-hmm. I could easily do 50K, mm-hmm. you know, so that's my long-term goal. Coming, you know, very, very long. That's not in my mindset right now, you know, for like a few minutes at a time, cause I'm coming back from injury, but, you know, long-term goal is to be able to develop that, capacity cardio wise and mindset wise to run forever. I just, a good friend of mine that I interviewed on my show, just ran his first 100 miler.
Yes, that was down in Florida. It was the long haul.
The long haul 100. The long haul 100.
Yeah. I saw several people I follow on Instagram posted and who ran. Susan Donnelly is one that I follow. And she posted pictures of that. And she's run it several times.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. He's Zach Bush is the guy that I interviewed. He's a real inspiration. Local, you know, just a local athlete. The guy that's worked really hard to get mm-hmm. where he is. And
that is a trail race, right?
It is a trail race. It's one of those where it's kind of like 10 loops of 10, you know, so. Okay. And it's a weird course where you're not exactly like running in a loop. You're kind of like running down a pathway, then going back up, and then.
I think I remember seeing the course, and it was a loop, and then there was an out and back, and
I would lose track. I don't know how they.
Well, that's kind of like a thing when trail racing is losing track and getting lost. it's a 10 mile and you run it 10 times.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So all of the different loops and out and backs, that would be hard because about the 10th time you tend to lose track of where you are. I mean, it's when you get to that point in 100 miles, I mean, it's hard anyway, but
I always thought those, you know, I did the, I don't know if you followed this race last year, the virtual race for the great virtual race across Tennessee that was hosted by Laz.
Uh-huh. Yes, I did follow that.
Yeah. So I did that last year and it was incredible, and it was amazing to watch, you know, the people that were actually in the race, like, interact mm-hmm. with them. And in that race, the winner, Terry Belowski, just blew me away. Again, another example of you can't even process how someone could do this. On the 12th day of the race, she was completed.
Okay.
It was a 4-month journey to reach 1,000 kilometers. And on day 12, she was done.
She was done on day.
Yeah. And I was like immediately logging on to Strava. How in the world did she do it?
Yeah. And did she win I know it was a virtual race, but was she the winner? She the one that
she was. Okay. And she ended up, you know, they did many amendments to the race of like, okay, well, now you went across Tennessee virtually, you could go back across, you know, like you can mm-hmm. basically keep going back and yeah. forth. I don't know how many times she ended up with by the time we were done. I'm sure it was a dozen.
I looked at that. I knew some people who were, you know, were planning to do that, and I had other things that were going on, and I was like, no, I don't think it was a fun challenge, but I kind of reined myself in and said no.
No, you know, I'm so grateful that I had the experience of being a part of that group and doing it, but I won't be doing it again this year. It was very hard. It was over the summer, mm-hmm. you know, so I looked at my own statistics, you know, from the prior year, and I had ran over those same 4 months, I had run 370 miles. So we're talking about May through the end of August, the hottest time of mm-hmm. the year in mm-hmm. Florida. And in this year, I ran 685 miles. So, you know, almost more than, you know, double miles. And yeah, I think it was a big factor in why I ended up injured at the end of the year. It was too much. It was too much for me personally. You know, a lot of other people did it and they did well, but last year was an unusual year for me. I was making a transition to go from just being a runner to becoming a triathlete. And I started that journey in January, and then the pandemic hit. You know, so by March, I was starting to get into a groove. I was only running a few days a week because when you're a triathlete, you've got three sports to train for, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and then the pandemic hit, everything started getting canceled. We, you know, started working from home, and I didn't know what to do. I was like, I can't swim. I know, obviously, I can still run and I can bike, but I can't train for a triathlon. So my race was canceled. I couldn't mm-hmm. follow my training plan. I fired my coach and I threw it out the window. I spent a month doing virtual races through Ironman. And then I saw the ad for the great virtual race and I signed up for that. And I went from triathlon training that probably would have kept me safe to 100% running six mm-hmm. days a week. And I think that was kind of my downfall. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's awful to admit as a coach, but I was in my athlete brain because I'm an overachiever. You know, I was like, I can do that. That's fine. Well, lesson yeah. learned. No, I couldn't.
ultra runners do that. There was a lady who I talked to, just ran ultra marathons one right after another. And she would do, you know, a couple hundred miles a month. She would do it just because, like, well, you know, I'm an ultra runner. It's supposed to, you know, you're supposed to be able to go. And ended up really burning herself out.
Yeah.
Physically. And it's just.
That was the hardest. I think, you know, there's so many lessons we all learned last year, but I think that was the biggest thing was just, you know, letting what was happening in the environment drive your own decisions. And then that was what made things poor. There was no plan. It was just throw it out the window. I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And that's where things go awry. And on top of that, I started running more and then I was like, I'm going to start trail running. I'm going to start doing this, you know? And it was just, I think, too many things for my body. By the time that summer was over, mm-hmm. I was actually supposed to start my marathon training and I was too hurt. You know, I was like, I started trying to train and I was like, I'm exhausted. You know, it was finally, it caught up with me. And then I was done, you know, for the holidays. I'm like, okay, first time. Thanks a lot, pandemic.
Was it just like you wore your body out, or did you have an injury like in your legs or your
Yeah, feet? No, I did end up with a supposed, I say supposed stress fracture of my tibia. Complete overuse injury, you know. So I think it was too much running. And I think really because what I said, it was going from the 3 days a week to, you know, like full on. And I looked at it. If you look at my statistics in April to May, I literally doubled, you know, which is, again, awful to admit. But I'm, you know, I'm a cards on the table kind of person. I learned my lesson. You can't, you know, as a coach, you're like, yeah, I know better. But coaches are awful athletes too. You know, like we need coaches. And I know that, you know, and I was like, I threw my coach out who was a triathlete coach because I wasn't doing the plan, but I shouldn't have made that decision at that time because that's what led me, you know, to where I ended up. But
when you end up getting injured, yeah.
You know, you learn. And now I'm coming back. You know, I've never had an injury like that. I've never been out in the 8 years that I've been running like that. You know, since the very first time that I told you about, I hadn't had anything significant like that. But now I'm coming back with a completely new focus. Because I think when you go through injury, you know, for me, I'm like, okay, I don't want to relive that ever again.
So, yeah.
You know, I'm taking it to the nth degree, literally. I'm becoming certified as a running technique specialist because I'm trying to take care with every step. And, you know, you think you know the fundamentals of form and technique, but do you really know how to change them? Like I actually had somebody do an evaluation on me last year and they're like, oh, you're overstriding. You're doing this, your hips are dropping, this, that, the other thing. And I'm like, oh, okay. But what do I do? How do I fix it?
Could they tell you how to fix it?
Nope.
Oh, really? So they just analyzed what you were doing and said,
yes,
this is your problem.
They're giving me physical therapy things to work on, but they weren't telling me how to actually fix my form. And so that was always like basically since last summer, that was kind of like a missing link in my brain. I'm like, okay, well, I don't know how to fix overstriding. How do I fix it? And so that was my mission coming back from this. I'm like, I can't relive, you know, I can't go back to it because it knows what was the real cause of my injury. And so that's what I'm doing now is teaching myself through this course I'm taking. I'm retraining.
Okay. So it's an online course for.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool, it's a program, a company, an organization, I should say, based out of England.
Okay.
And they have had their business for 40 plus years, thousands of clients that they've worked with that have used this technique. And now they offer it as a certification program. So
are you looking to be certified as an instructor?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm in the final weeks of it right now.
Okay. I'm in the final weeks of it right now.
Cool. And I've heard of several.
Yeah, there's many out there
that are you know, teach form, and especially in a lot of the running groups that I'm part of, there's a lot of debate. There's, you know, people who say, well, if your form is, you know, if you're not having problems, don't change.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out if you can find something that helps you go better, it helps you be better. Why wouldn't you?
100%. So there's kind of like two schools of thought on that, right? And they even say that in the training. They're like, you know, if nothing's bothering you and you don't care about improving, keep going.
Yeah.
But if you want to move better and run faster, here's what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and me, and you know, I think I'm sure there's other coaches that have gone down this pathway, but I feel very unique in my choice and the timing of how this all worked.
Mm-hmm.
It's another one of those like meant to be moments where it just happened. Like you're opening this course and I'm like, oh, look at that. I have to start back to running now. It's coming together in this beautiful marriage. And so I'm really looking at it through that lens and saying, look, you know, I had this diagnosis of overstriding and some of the other things that they were pointing out to me, and no one ever told me how to fix it. And I want to understand that. And now I want to help other people because you will end up injured if you keep doing these things over a long period of time. We're not meant to run that way. You're not meant to slam your foot into the ground and receive all that body force back into you, right? Like over time, it's going to wear on you in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And
what is the name of the course? I mean, can you say that?
Yeah, the school is called My Running School.
Oh, okay.
It's very simple.
Wow. And that's one I have not heard of. And I, yeah. the name of the other one, I can't remember. I could, if you had said it, I would have identified. Oh, you guys had heard of it.
Oh, there's the other Pose Method is really
popular. Pose was the one. Pose yeah. was the one I heard. Now the one that I learned, and when I started was Qi Running.
Yeah, I haven't looked into that. I've heard about that.
And I did basically. They got a book and videos. So I'm a kind of do-it-yourself type person. So I just kind of went out and just made adjustments by feel. And we were talking about you signing up to be certified. I just joined the Qi Running certification class.
Awesome.
And so I'm going through learning how to be a Qi Running instructor. But it's I mean, good. What other people have said, good form is good form.
Absolutely.
Each one has kind of their own take on it. I mean, the guy who did Qi Running, he developed it out of the Tai Chi. He was taking Tai Chi and then went to become a runner and basically took the same concepts of Tai Chi into running. And so that's kind of its, but the form varies a little bit, but it's basically to keep you from overstriding, to keep you from slamming that foot down on the ground and getting all that impact coming up through your body.
Well, I tell you, the biggest thing, you know, for anybody who's listening to this and for yourself, I think the biggest thing that you can help yourself to do is to get someone to film you in slow motion, have them do it, you know, like in a couple different angles, like where you're running away, where you're running by them, and just look at it for yourself. You don't even have to be an expert, you know.
No, you don't.
Helps to have an expert opinion for sure. And I can tell you now, I feel I'm not an expert, but I'm getting very close and I'm actually taking a biomechanical video analysis course as an addendum to this one I'm doing.
Okay.
Because again, I'm the person that wants to know every
the answers. You don't do half measures, right?
Give me everything you got. I want to know how this thing works. But you know, that just that alone can tell you so much. And I did that because I started part of my certification requires me to do practical work with clients. And so I'm working with friends. I just have friends who are volunteering with me and I had them do that. I had them film themselves. And without me even saying anything, they could see, they're like, wow, look at that heel striking or this, that, the other thing. And they're like, oh my gosh, how do I change this? You know, and I'm like, it's good because, you know, I think generally runners know what's wrong, but until we can look at it for ourselves, we don't recognize what we're doing. And then to have somebody to say, okay, here's how we can address it.
So, most runners I found they just put up with it. They don't because the fact that running and walking both are such a subconscious activity. You don't have to think about it. I mean, and that's, which is good. I mean, that's what our subconscious mind is supposed to do, but getting your subconscious to change is really, I mean,
that's why
so many people say don't do. There has to be some sort of commitment and to understand that, you know, somebody who says, yes, I don't want to stop running when I'm 50 or 40 or whatever. And I've seen younger runners who say, you know, I'm 40 years old. I'm going to have to stop in 10 years. And then I see other runners who are like 75 who are still going.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it doesn't have to be that way. And a lot of it is the, you know, get back to what you talked about, the mindset. People expect to get injured. People expect to, you know, there are a lot of things that are just kind of accepted as, oh, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And we never step back and go, well, why do we just.
I don't accept that. I have, you know, and that's part of my MO on this whole thing is like, one, for myself, I absolutely refuse to accept it. I don't want to relive it, you know, so I'm going to take every step that I can, but I don't accept it for my friends. I'm so tired of seeing people that I know, you know, just keep progressing with the same thing over and over and not know how to help them, you know. And it's like, it's simple things, you know, it's honestly simple things. And if you're willing to put the time and effort into it, you can retrain your brain. It doesn't, you know, it's not impossible, and yeah, it's worth it if you want to be a runner for life. And that's for me. I mean, I started with my coach. She's in her late 60s. She's been running her whole life, and she'll be running for the rest of her life. And I want to be that person. Yeah. I would quit next year. I just got started.
Betty White, which, you know, everyone knows about, you know, she's, I can't remember, she just celebrated her birthday.
Yeah.
She said the thing that bummed her out about the pandemic was she wasn't able to go out and run anymore because she lived in California and they weren't allowing any kind of outside activity. But she was still running a mile a day at 90, Dick Van Dyke is very similar. He runs and dances, and I think he's, they're over 90, both of them.
I love it. That was one of the things working with my coach that I had found. She's been running her whole life. And so, you know, just meeting other people that she's trained with, you know, I think it really opened up my eyes, especially in Florida. There's so many athletes that are, you know, 60, 70, 80. I've trained with them. I've run with them. Mm-hmm. If you think that when you get old, that it's all over, it's far from over. And there's so many people that are starting in their 60s, you know, and it sounds crazy, but it's absolutely possible. And there are people that will kick your butt in speed. It has nothing to do with age.
I know that. I keep looking at this. I keep looking at the charts and thinking, okay, you know, when I get to be old enough, will some of the people drop out and, you know, I'll be able to move up and rank. No, they're faster than I am now.
Exactly. That's why I love, that's part of what I love about Florida. Like, we have a few races that we do every year where we kind of go out, you know, it's some of the more remote or rural areas. And it's a lot of the, I call them like senior elite runners that come out, and then they just kick your butt, you know, mm-hmm. And you're like, how old is that guy? He's 60 something years old and he's running 18 minute, you know, 5K. You're like, I can't do it. So age is irrelevant.
Yeah. My friend is and I've never been a fast runner. And so, you know, I've always, you know, the running that I did back in my 30s, or late early 30s, I was really, you know, still slow compared to for my age. But you know, my friend is my age, and you know, he doesn't run much, but when he's fast, and he's fast up the hills. And he just, you know, we don't run together. I mean, he has to slow down if we're going to run together.
I hear you.
Cause I mean, I run trails too, but my best time on the road this summer, it was like I hit a 10 minute mile.
That's awesome.
No, it was at the end of five. I mean, I had already run five, and so it was at the end of the run. But I was, you know, I was pushing it, and I was like, I can't maintain that pace.
Yeah.
And for a lot of runners, 10-minute miles, that's kind of their base.
Yeah.
And my friend is that way. I think he's, you know, 10 minutes a mile is slow for him. And so, you know, everyone's body's different.
And
I always tell people, you know, I don't run for, I mean, I don't have that competitive drive, you know? Right. So my competition is with me, and just the goals of like, how far can I go? How long can I go? And so when I started back running, I was 60 when I started again.
That's and awesome.
So, and I started with the idea, a friend of mine had run a 50 mile trail race. And I said, I bet I could do that. And so I started with the idea that I was going to run that race the next year.
Wow.
So I went from zero running to 50 miles in a year, which most, I mean, you as a coach, you kind of know, you tell people, no, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But the race had a generous cutoff because they had a 100-mile race going on as well. So the cutoff for the 50 and the 100 was both the same.
Yeah.
So it was like, I know I can finish. I know as long as I keep moving, I can finish. And a lot of people will do that. That is a 50-mile race that a lot of people like to do because of the fact that, you know, if they run into issues, they can walk and still get the miles.
That's good.
But I mean, you set the bar to compete as you want. And you know, my friend, he runs short races and fast. I run long races and slow.
Well, now with the you know, when I started working at Ironman last year, I was immediately inspired to get into triathlon. And I have to tell you honestly, like prior to that, I still think triathletes are unicorns. I just don't understand how they do it. It's insane. Like if you think about an Ironman race, a full Ironman is a 2.4 mile swim, which is very serious, 112 mile bike ride, and a full marathon, full marathon in one race.
and at the end, you know, at the end of all that, you run the marathon. And any one of those is a pretty good amount by themselves. So how did you get started working for Ironman?
Yeah, I was very fortunate. That was the year I was supposed to do that European race, and I was out of work. I left the company that I was at for 9 years, and I was in like an executive level position previously. And you know, when you're at those high levels, I was like, I just don't know that I want to do this anymore. So stressful, and you know, pay is great, but it's not worth it for the life that you get left over with. And I kept looking and looking and looking, and Ironman had always been on my radar because their global headquarters are based here in Tampa.
Okay.
But there was little, you know, that ever came up from them. I could never find anybody. I was like, somebody I know that's got to be there. But finally a position came up, and it was, again, it was meant to be. I'm like, I don't even know who else could qualify for this role. It was basically like right in my wheelhouse. So my professional background is in e-commerce and digital product development.
Okay.
And that's what I do. I manage the digital products for coaching and training. And I got very lucky. I'm on the global coaching and training team, and you know, it was the most unusual year to start working at the largest events company in the world when the pandemic is happening and there's events going. But I'm very happy and lucky and blessed to say that I'm still working there despite those factors. And so excited to see, you know, hopefully as we progress through the pandemic, that things are going to return so that we can get races back to normal, because it's the Ironman Group is responsible for Ironman races. They also own Rock and Roll Marathon Series. But something that most people don't know is that Ironman actually owns many other races across the world. The Auckland Marathon, we've just gotten into some ultra races, like some of the big races, the Australia Ultra 100, and things like that. So there's a huge portfolio of races. And so it's such an exciting company to be a part of. And I mean, the Ironman brand it's iconic. It is the epitome of what I'm obsessed with in my personal life, which is achieving the seemingly impossible. You know, you see athletes go out and do the most incredible things. So it's been, you know, really inspiring to see what people do through our sport. It makes me want to do it. I never thought I was going to be into triathlon, and here I am. Trying my hardest to. I never, you know, my level of swimming was when I was a kid. I was the kid that, you know, did the dog paddle and wore the nose plug when I went into the pool and closed my eyes when I went underwater. That was the only level of swimming. I never got taught swimming.
Did you then have to take swimming lessons to?
Yeah. So I,
how did that go?
Oh, it was very difficult. And again, last year is when I started all this. So talk about the worst year to try and become a triathlete. So my training was all over the place. But I was, again, I'm super duper fortunate that actually my boss, who's that I work for at Ironman, is a professional triathlon coach and specializes in swimming. And so in addition to a coach that I was working with outside of the company, who is a certified Ironman coach and was helping me, he helped me. I was able to attend a swimming camp of his. And then I met, there's just an amazing triathlon community here in the Tampa Bay area that I honestly, when you're not interested or participating in something, you have no idea. I always have my blinders on. I'm like, running, 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 running. Oh my God, I was blown away at the swimming community that is here in Tampa Bay. There's an amazing group here in Clearwater, which is one of the most beautiful beaches in Florida. And they're like 1,000 strong, a huge group of swimmers. And they're just as passionate as runners. There are swimmers in these groups that are marathon swimmers. And I was just like, oh my God, what is happening over here? They're just as crazy, so each sport I've come to find really has that same passion and intensity of people involved. And so that's been amazing. I think it just has really allowed me to get into it more, because swimming alone, I won't focus so much on biking yet, because that's kind of my third wheel I haven't gotten to. I need to get into more this year. But swimming is very hard. It's very foreign. It is not intuitive. but I love it at the same time, because of those things. It's so difficult. I had zero appreciation for how hard swimming is. They say that 1 mile of swimming is equal to 4 miles of running. So anybody who looks at swimming, they're like, oh, it looks so easy, Mike, because they've been doing it for years. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of practice.
Well, I'm in the same situation you were. When I learned how to swim, it was dog paddle, and you never put your face in the water, and you do the crawl stroke, but your head is always back, and you're pushing the water with your chest. Very inefficient. And I mean, I could do it. I was for what it was, so I had thought about doing a triathlon. I had some friends who did it, and I thought I would have to learn how to swim. And so I'm just curious where you went to a swimming camp, and I think of a swimming camp like a running camp.
Yeah.
That is like these people who are really good and they're just trying to get better. And, where did you start? I mean, how did you get to
the water and breathe? Cool. So like I said, my boss actually was running the camp, and he had three other coaches, and then it was just a bunch of athletes that actually had trained with them before. So I was really the only person that was like 100% new to swimming. But it was a whole weekend where we came in and, really got to learn technique and practice. And so I was super fortunate to have a coach really help. That's the biggest thing was when you're getting started. I mean, you need somebody to tell you what to do, and what you're doing wrong. And there's going to be so many things you're doing wrong. No idea how hard it is. And I will say, that was literally last January. In fact, in my Facebook memories, the picture just came up today from the swim camp from last year. Mm-hmm. And, I will say I'm 100% different now. Like, I knew nothing last January, and I feel very confident in swimming now. I am still learning a ton, but I was able to complete 2 quarter-mile open water swims last September as part of an actual triathlon race. And I'm training right now for an Olympic distance, which is just shy of a mile. So my goal is to be able to swim that by the end of April. And then in the back of my mind right now, I'm kind of waiting. There's a potential race opening up through Ironman. That would be a half Ironman, a 70.3. which is a 1.25 mile swim.
Okay.
That would be in around the end of July and or around August or something. So yeah, it's in the back of my mind.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of the way our, these sports go. I mean, the and I know there are a lot of people that that feel pressure. Well, you've done this distance, then, and you know, some of your clients may be the same way. Well, I've done the half marathon. Right. The next thing I should do is be the marathon.
Cool. Yeah.
And marathon runners is like, well, you know, I need to go run an ultra. It's not stopping. And there was a 300 some mile race out in California. And like, you know, they say the 100 mile distance has become like the new marathon. That's kind of what people are shooting for.
Well, listen to this statistic. I was on a call with our company and they were talking about, we had a whole interview with our trail. We have like a team that runs the trail races and the guy was talking about statistics for women in trail running. And this stat just blew me away. He was like, oh, women can run really well at 195 miles or more. I'm like, okay, so I got to go to 200 to beat the men. What?
I'm trying to go back through. Trying to remember what I go back through, whatever. Because you know, the women do. I mean, Big's Backyard, Maggie Goodroll. I mean, she was, you know, 56 hours of running and was the last woman standing. You know, like all the men were, and but at the 100 mile distance, I'm trying to remember if there are women who are competitive at, you know, there are so many runners.
There's amazing. But that was so unusual. In fact, he was saying, you know, I mean, I'm not into the ultra space yet. You know, I think I'm still going into triathlon. So ultra is kind of going a little bit to the side for me for the moment. It's still a personal goal to go there, but it's like, he's like, oh, 100, that's old now. Now people want to go, you know, beyond. I'm like, well, of course they do. Like, yeah, like you just said.
Well, and it's just, you know, there's a mindset for people who want to find out what their limits are.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I always had that, but I, you know, always let other things crowded out and made excuses. And, you know, finally started doing some mindset work and before I started running.
Yeah.
And that's what allowed me to jump into running. And then I was like, oh my goodness, there's this whole community of people out here doing amazing things.
Yeah.
That, you know, that when I looked at it from the outside, it's like that's impossible. And then I started to go, well, no, if I break it down, I think I can do that. And
anything is possible, truly. I mean, it truly is. It sounds nuts. All these crazy documentaries that you watch, the eco-adventure.
Yeah.
On Amazon, you're like, these people are nuts. But, you know, I think the reality in endurance sports is that, and I think it's, they even say it in here, and I've read this many times, what do we have in our lives to push our limits? We really don't have, you know, we don't live like they did back in the old times where there's hard work for us. Our hard work is at a desk. You know, we live with air conditioning. We have food, you know, we have sustenance, we have good lives. So we push ourselves through pain and suffering to see the limits of what is possible for our, you know, for ourselves through these sports, because it's our only outlet, you know? And so I think it's really interesting perspective that probably sounds bananas to anyone who's not in the athletic community, but to you and I and other listeners on here, it makes 100% sense. And when you can look at it through that view, you could look at anybody in any of these endurance sports and say, yeah, they're a sane person. they're trying to, you know, live their best life and, you know, and enjoy it. And, you know what, maybe they might end up injured, maybe they might die. I don't know, but they're doing what they love, you know, and that's all you can do.
Yeah. And sometimes people do. I mean, the 50 mile trail race I was in, I was the first person. I was the first person that came upon a man who had a heart attack and
died.
And it was, yes, it's sad. But,
it's very sad.
But I said he's out there doing what he loved.
Yeah.
And it was a genetic congenital. I mean, it was like it ran in the family, not something, you know, ran in his family, not something that could have been diagnosed beforehand. He didn't even really know he had it. And then it just boom and happened all of a sudden. And I'm like, you know, that's better than people, you know, who had to suffer from cancer. I mean, I've seen, there's just, and you go back to what it was corny, you know, the movie Braveheart, when he says, so everyone dies, but so few people really live. And that's, and I think that is, I think the, what a lot of us are looking for.
Absolutely.
Can I find something where I feel like I'm really alive that is, you know, that's making me push to the limits?
Yeah, I have it, that, you know, that makes me think of an athlete that I trained with. So when I did that, when I trained for the first half marathon, I was training with my coach alone, you know, and then when that was all done, I was like, oh, I can start running. Maybe I'll start trying to run with her group. And I started going out with the group and I didn't know anybody at the time. And I met this woman who was in the group and ended up finding out she had stage 4cancer of some sort. Mm-hmm. And I trained with her through the final months of her life. And she was doing exactly that. I'll never, ever forget it. So it was a very, you know, just imprinted moment in my mind of here's somebody who's dying literally, but she's out here pushing herself even with chemo and treatments and she'd be in pain. She's like, because I'd rather be out here living and feeling alive than, you know, in a hospital bed, because it's what she loves. She was a runner. She's, you know, hundreds of medals, all these different races that she had done prior to all this happening. And it's like, wow. The power that you can see through this sport goes far beyond, you know, just the, hey, it's a 5K and whatnot. It's life changing. It's mentally and physically changing, you know, how we perceive life and how we enjoy life. So
And for people who are just starting out, a 5K is, I mean, it takes the same mental focus and the mental, you know, the mental mindset to complete those 3 miles as for other people who've had more experience. And I have, I run with friends and they like the marathon distance. They'll do some maybe 50K or 50K race, but that's kind of their sweet spot. And they don't have any desire to run any farther. And then, you know, there's a group of people that is like, you know, we're going to do 100 miles and go into, you know, the canyons of Moab to run up and down, you know, crazy elevation. And, but I just, that, I say people should do what makes them happy.
Everyone has their limits. And some of us, like you and I think are the people that like to test those limits, you know, and it's just, it's right now I could sit here and say, like, I'm definitely scared of a half mirror, half Ironman. It's scary. So to think about a full sounds bananas. I'm like, I can't even perceive it. But I know as soon as I finish a first half, I'm going to say I have to do that because it's just the way that my brain. And so I've really trained myself very hard to try and not say the word never, because every time I've ever found that I've used that word, I end up eating crow because I take it back, you know? And then that's those moments where you're like, well, I never said I was going to do that. I was never going to be a swimmer. Here I am. You know, it's like, why? You only live this life once. Why limit your possibilities? Just try, you know, to do it.
And I think those of us who have that mindset and want to have that challenge, we'll find that place where we can get that consistently. And for a lot of people, you know, people I know, that's 100 miles. And they're, well, and like your half Ironman, there are, you know, there are a lot of things that can go wrong in a half Ironman, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
make you not finish. And even the shorter distances.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so
I was just barking down somebody's throat about, you know, she's like, oh, she's trying to convince somebody else about doing a sprint. She's like, oh, you're only going to be in the water for 10 minutes. I'm like, whoa there, lady, if you're a brand new swimmer, don't tell somebody they're only going to be in the water for 10 minutes. That is not going to happen.
So how far is the sprint Ironman?
So a sprint distance is actually the only unregulated distance in triathlon. Oh. So it depends on what the race director wants to make that distance. It could be a quarter mile. It could be 800 yards. It could be 1,000 yards.
I don't know that I would, you know, 800 yards. I don't know that I would get out of the water. They'd be dragging me.
I had zero respect or even never really thought about it, but you have no idea. There are so many more factors in triathlon. You've got three different sports. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in running, you're like, I got one. I got my shoes. I got the weather on the road and the trails, and that's all I got to deal with. Right. Not in triathlon. You've got to deal with what kind of water am I in? Is it an ocean? Is it a lake? Is it going to be cold? Is it going to be a high current? You know, what, like all these different things. Am I going to wear a wetsuit? Am I not going to wear a wetsuit? What's the bike course? Is it going to be hilly? Is it going to be flat? What kind of bike do I need? You know, there's just all these, and then you're still going to run. Like,
and there's mechanical issues with the bicycle.
Yes, you have to be a bike mechanic. Like, oh my God, there's so many things to know.
even the running. I mean, I've talked to trail runners that have had to duct tape their shoes or borrow shoes.
Yes.
Because they've blow out a shoe and you're out on the trail and there's you're done unless you're, you know. those kinds of challenges are what draws us, I think.
Yeah.
Because you know, you've got to have a good day. You've got to have, you know, all of the things working right. And so, if you fail, you fail. But you go back again and you keep. And so I think there's a level. I mean, I think, you know, it's some of my friends that level's 50K. Some of them 50 miles. When I did 100 miles, I fell in. I was like, yes, that was because like you, you said you'd finished a marathon and felt like you could go on. That's the way I felt after 50 miles.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a challenge. It was rewarding, but I was like, yeah, I've got more in me than that.
And yeah.
So I'm going to do a few more 100 milers to say, you know, if I end up saying, yeah, I got more in me than I, there's a few other places you can go to go farther.
So. Yeah, it's crazy. I love it.
And with the marathon or the Ironman, different places, you'd have different challenges. And so I think you could
it's interesting because I'm in that business now. So it's like, I'm kind of going into that realm and trying to understand that athlete and be that athlete, you know, to get into that mindset. Cause it's, you know, for me, that's, you know, it is the runner's mindset, but there's just the mindset of the athlete too. And like how they get through these seemingly impossible challenges.
So for a middle of the pack Ironman or contestant, what kind of total time do they have?
Oh gosh. I don't even know, to be honest.
Depending on the race, I would imagine, but
yeah, it does depend on the race. So like the Ironman championship, which is in Kona, Hawaii every year, they have 17 hours to complete the course.
Wow, that's not much.
It's really not much. And it's like the toughest course in the world. It's crazy. We have, I'd highly recommend you to check out this guy if you haven't seen his story, Chris Nikitch. He just did his first full Ironman actually during the pandemic. It was just this last November and here in Florida. He's a Florida athlete. He's the world's first Down syndrome athlete to complete an Ironman.
Wow.
he got a place in the Guinness Book of World Records. It was like the pinnacle of the year, honestly. Like everyone just felt like, you know, 2020 was just crap. And then here came this guy, like, didn't matter what was going on. He was training for that race and the race went off and he did it. And we're like, wow. You know, just a proof case for, you know, here's a, you know, Down syndrome athlete, like, mm-hmm. to complete a full Ironman. No one has done it. It was 2020. No one has done it in the 40 plus year history of Ironman. Mm-hmm. And wow. So it's really a testament to he's a huge mindset guy. He has a whole thing about, I'm getting 1% better every day. And mm-hmm. he has a very ambitious goal to actually train for the Kona Championship this year.
Wow. Okay.
And, I think that everyone's trying to give him as many resources as they can to help him prepare, but everyone's concerned at the same time because it is the toughest course that we have. I'm rooting for him. I mean, he's just... It is the epitome of a case of like, what does it take? What does it take to get through, you know, a race like that? So it's, I love stuff like that. Cause that's
human. No, tell his name again. Tell me his name again.
Chris Nikic.
Chris Nikic. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'll put that in
there. It's pretty inspiring. So, you'll find as soon as you search for his name, there's going to be like a million. He's been everywhere. He's been all over the news. It's been a big story. It's pretty cool. And I think it's cool because you're in Florida.
Well, I usually try to keep these to about an hour, and we're a little bit longer than that. But one of the things we've kind of touched on it. Do you have a bucket list race that is on your agenda that you're like, okay, this is one I really want to get to?
Yeah, probably that. I mean, there's a lot of bucket list races. I don't know if Snowdonia is on there. Snowdonia? Right. it's a little bit tough.
How about an Ironman goal, since we kind of talked about it, and you're just getting started at that. Well, do you have one that's like, yeah, if I can do it, this is one I'd like to do.
Yeah, there. Like I said, there's one. I can't say the name of it because the company actually hasn't released. It's an race. It's a race that used to be an Ironman race, and then it went out. But we're potentially bringing it back this year for the first time in several years. So.
Okay.
You've got one in mind.
It's, yeah.
I can reveal the confidential information.
Yes, I understand how that works. So, well, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to. When the pandemic is really over and whatnot, I'd love to get back to, you know, the idea of doing something in Europe. My, one of the races I was looking at, I can't think of the name of it right now, was in Ireland. It's like, gosh, I wish I could think of the name of it. There's one, it's very much like Big Sur, but it's in Ireland where it goes along the coast.
Okay.
Ireland. And, the Dingle. I think it's called Dingle Marathon because it's based in Dingle. It sounds ridiculous, but that's the name of the town in Ireland. It basically goes along the coast of Ireland. And I just think that would be, because I'm all about the scenery. You know, I just love to see places like that on foot. I just don't think
that Ireland is beautiful.
Yeah, you can't. I'm like, I'm so convinced I'm going to go over there and not want to leave.
Well, give us your information. How if people hear this on podcast, how would be best way to touch base with you?
Yeah, sure. I can be found. So I have my own website. It's Runner's Mindset, A Runner's Mindset.
A Runner's Mindset.
Okay. A Runner's Mindset.com. That's the best way to find me. And then you can find my Instagram and Facebook pages. It's the same thing. It's A Runner's Mindset.
That's good. Have that all the way consistent.
It's all connected. I'm even on LinkedIn with that. So yeah. That's my digital background. I've got it all set up.
Right. That's good. Well, thank you for taking time, Gina. I really appreciate it. And I wish you well with your, with that. And I'll be watching your Instagram to see how your Ironman training goes and whether
you, thank you.
get that done this year. So
awesome. Well, it was a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks again. Take care.
Night.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset, or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.